listener production.
As I got to the car, the daughter was sitting in there and she was screaming. And had I not slowed just those few seconds earlier, she'd have gone straight underneath the fuel tanker that I was driving.
Now, last season, we had legendary comedian and actor Shane Jacobson join us, along with social media sensation Trucking with CJ. You can find those eps in our first season library, but both of those guests, just like a bit of the story you've heard now, highlighted a subject that we wanted to pursue today around sharing the road with trucks. Today, we're very much focused on giving you a virtual sense of what truckies go through and why the rest of us motorists need to employ a bit of empathy around making decisions as we drive that allows those beautiful big rigs to safely reach their destination, to share the road safely and wisely. Hi, everybody. I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
Welcome to the Keep Your Wheels On podcast, another ep of the series where you will hear from real people talking about the mistakes that either resulted in them crashing a vehicle or narrowly avoiding a situation that could have been much, much worse. And along the way, we're joined by experts to chat about how you can do your best to avoid ending up in similar situations. Our guest today has spent more than 20 years behind the wheel of heavy vehicles, trucks. He's been a truckie, but more importantly, nowadays he's working with a manufacturer in Volvo and acutely knows what these latest specification trucks offer on our road and the kind of things that truckies go through every day. Matt Wood, hello and welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Tell us a little bit about the importance of sharing the road, in your opinion, and why, from all that experience you've had over the years, you see this as such a strong point.
I think understanding how heavy vehicles work in terms of how they stop, how they go around corners and stuff like that. I mean, we see things daily. I think from a driver's perspective, if you spoke to any driver, they will tell you how many near misses they've had during the course of a single day. The most common one in heavy traffic is a car cutting right across in front of them and they're trying to stop and somehow they just miss them. And, you know, the reality is more often than not, they miss them more than they hit them. But, I mean, that is probably the scariest thing because it's literally just that understanding how they work. They're big, they're heavy, they are getting safer and safer all the time, but they are still, you know, at minimum 42 and a half tons, on average 62 and a half tons or heavier. The laws of physics still at play, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Matt. I mean, that's what people don't understand. But at no point in the whole learning to drive process are people actually required to actually do some hours sharing the road or understanding how to share the road, whether or not that's in a practical sense or in simulation training or even just in the tests for them to actually understand the physics involved. I mean, National Heavy Vehicle Regulator came out with some research only last week that over 50% of learners have never had any training driving alongside a heavy vehicle, and then they're allowed out on the road.
It strikes me as crazy. If you're not given that situational awareness, you're not going to learn it. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm 105 years old, but there was a time back before colour was invented and people walked really quickly, that your car was actively trying to kill you all the time, right? Like they weren't built to crash. They weren't built to stop very well. They had live axles, all of these terrible things. So you learnt situational awareness very quickly. Now, I'm not saying we should go back to that, but as cars have gotten safer and more cosseting and stuff like that, it doesn't occur to you that that big rubber tyre spinning beside your driver's window, that could explode. That's the worst place you want to sit beside a truck. A truck tyre doesn't deflate quietly. It takes bits of mudguard and everything with it, right? We don't communicate that. We don't educate kids that that's not a good place to be. I'm not trying to say we go back to HQ Holden's. Just want to clarify that.
I like where you're going there, and it actually opens the door perfectly to the subject matter of this episode. We want our younger drivers to be aware of those laws of physics when you're trying to stop or maneuver a big vehicle like that, what it's like to be around them and why we need to switch on our awareness of that stuff and what can happen when it goes wrong, and it can go wrong big time, right? So with so many large vehicles on the road that car drivers are going to encounter. We wanted to give you a look at things with the help of Rod and our guest storyteller today from the truck driver perspective. This is where the person that you heard at the very start of the episode comes into play. They have had incidents with car drivers on an almost daily basis. Let's meet them now.
My name's Rod Hanafy. I'm a road transport and road safety advocate. I'm involved in a number of different projects regarding trucks and road safety, and I've been driving since I was 17, went for my license in a semi-trailer. So I didn't spend a lot of time actually learning in cars. I drove my first road train when I was 16 in Western Queensland with someone sitting beside me. I was in what's called a quad box Mac, so it has two gear sticks. So you've really got to know what you're doing. And the bloke said, would you like to have a go? And I said, yes. And that was my first experience driving. And then the first time I drove a road train, that was fairly daunting. I was still 16. But since then, I've driven everything from a rigid through to triple road trains as far away as Perth and Darwin. We now have a graduated licensing system. So you can't turn up in a semi-trailer at 17 and get a semi-trailer license anymore. And I think that's a good thing. But I have a real concern that at the moment with young car drivers, we teach them to pass the test. We don't teach them how to survive on the road for the next 50 years. We teach them just enough to pass the test. Then we let them loose and they have no knowledge of sharing the road with trucks. They make a mistake and sometimes it's a tragic consequence. Whilst I drive trucks and cars, most car drivers don't get time in trucks and we certainly don't teach them anything about that when they get their license. There are people who will say, well, trucks are big and they're pushy or they're intimidatory. That's not the intent of the truck driver. It might be how the car driver feels. But yes, they are bigger. They certainly need more room to manoeuvre, to get round corners. That's why we have the do not overtake turning vehicle signs. They need more time to get going. They need more time to stop. And that then multiplies as you get to bigger and bigger combinations. And if someone's used to driving their little car around, they don't recognise that we need that much room to get around a corner. And look, people are impatient. The way of life today is everyone wants to be there yesterday and they don't like to be held up. And as a perfect example, we come up to a roundabout and we know that it takes a while to get the truck going. So we'll be looking at all the lines of traffic. And of course, with a truck, you've actually got to watch behind you to make sure someone's not going to cut underneath you at the roundabout as well. And we try and roll through so that we delay everybody as little as possible. But as we come up, someone in a car, you will see it every time. They'll put the boot into the accelerator. They'll come roaring up to get through and save 2 seconds. At the last minute, I've got to come to a complete stop and everybody behind thinks, what's wrong with this truck driver? Why did he stop there? And yet the car driver simply couldn't wait and have a little bit of patience, and then he's affected everybody else. And look, I'm concerned that people now are very, you know, selfish on the road, and I think we have to do something to change that to make them more aware.
I reckon that's a really valid point about changing our mindset, changing our awareness. By and large, most truck drivers you will meet are very good people who are doing some important work for us, no matter what industry they are in. For you, Matt, how much of what Rod talks about here resonates?
The thing is, even though I now work for a truck manufacturer, safety is something that's like, I joined Volvo for a reason, right? You know, I'll be the first to admit that you are actively preventing accidents on a daily basis as a truck driver. It just happens all the time. You're having to read other people's almost the way they're driving the car. You can tell who's going to dart up the inside of the truck. You can just see by the way they're driving and things like that. You can see a distracted driver because of how they're sitting in the lane and they're sort of, you know, their Google Maps is frozen or something like that and they're not thinking about what they're doing. And it actually, you end up with spidey senses pretty much. There's probably a number of factors. I think the image of trucking has not always been that great. The image of who a truck driver is also hasn't been that great historically.
Misconceptions. It's created a perception that isn't necessarily right, is what you're saying, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reality is that it's not this like someone like me in a blue singlet, but like, you know, there's new wave of immigrations that are coming into transport, just like there was in the 60s and the 50s. There's a lot more women coming into trucking now because there's more awareness about how it's a place where you can earn a, you know, a decent wage. And this whole idea that it's like intensive labor, heavy work is actually not true. I think trucking itself has a little bit of an image problem, and I think that's why it tends to get ignored a little bit. It's not a sexy topic.
But transport as an industry is so important in Australia because, I mean, we're a very large country and we need to get goods and produce in and around the country. It will always be a massively big industry and we need a lot more truck drivers. And right now, because the reputation of truck drivers, we're battling to actually recruit more coming into the industry.
Yeah.
And right now it's about 50% of truck drivers are aged over 50.
Yeah.
The industry is looking at other areas to try and recruit more people into it in terms of immigration and what have you, and women, because it is, they're trying to be a lot more inclusive and get rid of some of those reputations from past years.
Absolutely. That is exactly the case. And the other thing too is that there was a time when you could see what was on a truck, right? And then as they got more modern, they've got bodies on them and all that sort of thing. The general public don't see something they need. They just see this big sort of thing blocking the road that you need to get around. And I think the relationship, that sort of connection between that truck might be delivering what I'm going to buy from the supermarket tonight, or that might be my television or whatever, is kind of a little bit lost. And I think as our cities have grown as well, industrial areas used to be really close to where people lived. Now they're hidden away in industrial suburbs, right? So the transport task itself is kind of largely hidden from society. It's just these big vehicles on the road. Well, I think we've lost that connection with they are providing a service. And I think that contributes somewhat to their image problem as well.
I want to go back to something that Rod said in the comment there a moment ago around the training and how people, not even just young people listening, aren't fully aware of what it is like to be regularly when they're learning around a truck, but also what goes on for the driver, what their life is like. I think Shane Jacobson said last season that everyone really, as a part of the licensing process, should spend half a day or a day with a truck driver and understand and appreciate it. I tell you where I'm going here. It wasn't with you guys. It was with another manufacturer last year that I got to spend some time at the Mount Cotton Driver Training Complex driving a B double. I had never done that before. And I walked away feeling like I feel when I'm on a motorcycle, that your senses are heightened, your awareness is double because you're like, who's coming out of that driveway? Where's that dog going? And so on. A, we get a bit complacent behind the wheel of the car that we're driving. And B, Matt, don't you think it would be vital for people to spend some time in a big rig like this and actually come to appreciate how difficult it is to manoeuvre and to do what they do when we're all in that phase of being so busy on the road, chopping people off, trying to get through traffic and just not taking the right attitudinal approach to this?
I couldn't agree more. I think we often try and get people behind the wheel. We even try and get our own people behind the wheel. So at that very Mount Cotton circuit, I've actually sat in the passenger seat of a B-double with a terrified intern driving a B-double for the first time. It's fantastic because, you know, they finally get to understand what we do and what we build, but also it gives you a little bit of a glimpse of what the job entails. Also, we don't actually talk about the human toll without getting, for some people it is traumatic because they do actually see terrible accidents. But there's also the stress of the what ifs, you know, the car that you nearly hit because of something they did and all of that sort of stuff. It is stressful, and that also has a personal toll on the driver, you know. So I think humanising the industry, I suppose, is where I'm going with that. It's not just these big anonymous trucks. There's a human being with a family that wants to also get home without the baggage of causing or being a part of a terrible accident. Mm. It's an industry made of people.
Let's go back to Rod and find out a bit more about some of the other incidents that he's faced along the way too.
The other day, coming into Dubbo, I had two incidents within an hour. One was a car overtook me where he really couldn't see enough road space, and had the truck coming the other way been 3 or 4 seconds further along the road, that car would have been beside me with a truck coming at him and nowhere to go. The second one, I'm travelling on a major highway in an 80k zone. I can see a vehicle coming down on my left, And I thought, yep, he can see me. I'm this big truck. And he's going to stop at the intersection because there is actually a give way sign there. He shot straight out in front of me and I missed him by less than an inch. I saw the bloke's face, and had he been just a little bit slower and I hit him, I would have put the bull bar straight through his door and I could have killed him. Now, he simply was so impatient that instead of waiting for the truck to go past, he tried to accelerate out in front of it. And again, had a vehicle coming the other way, he hadn't seen them because he's watching me to just, well, I might get through here. And if he hadn't seen someone coming the other way, he could have hit them as well and I still could have got him. My trips are generally 10 hours, but there's no doubt that every time someone takes a risk. The thing that first got me involved in road safety, I had slept at Narrabri, got up in the morning, I was heading north out of Narrabri, and I could see one car behind me, and there was a B-double coming the other way towards me. Now, it wasn't the car behind me, it was the car behind that. So they're trying to overtake a car and a B-double with a B-double coming the other way. Both B-doubles went off onto the dirt. We had to put our wheels off on the shoulder, and luckily there was one. There were two young children sitting in the back of that car. Now, that was the first incident, and I rang the police. I think, why would people risk their life to save 2 seconds? Honestly, it would have been a tragedy for them, their family. There might have been other members of the family not with them. They would have had to grieve. There would have been all their friends. But the truck driver is forgotten in that. And that's where I've got involved. I've got the Truckies Top 10 Tips. I'm very much involved in getting rest areas. And as we've discussed, I'm concerned that we don't teach young people enough about sharing the road with trucks, because I see what happens when they don't understand them. I was driving from Brisbane to Dubbo. I was in a section of road called the Pilliga, is the Pilliga Forest, between Narrabri and Coonabarabran. I sort of slowed down actually looking for a safe shoulder to pull up and have a leak. We're getting older and you've got to do that, and there's no toilets for truck drivers out there, mate. That's one of the issues that we have. And as I came down towards a dip in the road, car coming towards me went straight across in front of me, and I thought, geez, there's no road there. Where the hell were they going? And as I've then looked behind me, they've gone off. All I could see was dust, and I actually saw underneath the car. It sort of looked as though it was going to flip. I pulled up, there was no shoulder, I couldn't get off the road. I pulled up, put the hazard lights on, I ran back. As I got to the car, the daughter was sitting in there and she was screaming because she couldn't open the passenger door. They just clipped the Armco and that had stopped her from opening the door. So I opened it and made sure she was okay. And the mother had been driving, of course. She fell asleep. The daughter was sitting there with headphones on, looking at the screen. She wasn't watching the mother. And had I not slowed just those few seconds earlier, she'd have gone straight underneath the fuel tanker that I was driving. I really am thankful that I slowed that day, because that could have been a terrible tragedy. They could have both died and I could have as well. I know a truck driver who gave his life to save the life of a motorist. The motorist did something wrong, the truck driver, and this was an accident investigation done after the accident, the truck driver made a conscious decision not to hit the car and shunt it out into the traffic, but to go off the road. And in doing that, he died. I know of other drivers who have been involved in major accidents and not gone back to work. Whilst on the news, you hear of a tragedy, it's a truck crash. Now, that implies guilt by default, when if you look at the stats, major crashes between cars and trucks with a fatality are more than 75% the fault of the car driver. And yet that truck driver went to work that day to do his job, to feed his family, to get home safely. And if that sort of incident occurs, he's going to see that every night in his nightmares for the rest of his life. And that's very rarely ever considered.
He has very good cut through, Matt, with this, doesn't he? I mean, the array of incidents that he's just rattled off and the frightening detail in all of that for me, the fact that a colleague has lost a life, a reminder about the fact that they fundamentally, if they survive, end up with like a post-traumatic stress disorder very often. I mean, we need to not just be mindful of the physics of the vehicle. This is the human stuff that we're talking about here too, isn't it?
Nobody goes to work to potentially kill or maim someone, right? Like, there's a lot to love about trucking. You know, I did do it for a long time. You know, there is that sort of wide open spaces and feeling like you've got a little bit more freedom to manage your day and all that sort of thing. And then I think, and these things come into our lives, it sort of brings it back to a stark reality. I lost 5 workmates over 5 years in truck crashes.
Wow.
Right. And that's just truck crashes. That's like either a fatigue related incident or a collision with another heavy vehicle in the middle of the night. Because the reality is most intercapital transport happens overnight,
yeah,
especially on the East Coast anyway. Once you get into that sort of urban interface, although, you know, to be fair, Rod was talking about that, you know, that experience of just being out on the open road. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's almost a sociological kind of aspect to this, that because, you know, again, I keep talking about modern vehicles. Modern vehicles are more powerful, right? Like you can actually go, I might make this.
Mm.
There was a time in automotive technology, you just go, I'm not even going to try it because, like, you know, a gust of wind and I'm, you know, going backwards. Our kids are driving and so they should be. They should be driving the safest vehicle they can possibly be in or afford or whatever.
Mm.
But having an awareness that just because it has some power and just because it has these safety features, it can't make you risk averse.
It's a false sense of security.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, there's a little bit of a she'll be right. Mm. You know, if I just put the foot down here, we'll make it. And we do see these close calls time and time and time again, whether that's in a regional area or in the urban area. And often in the regional area, it's worse because the roads are so crap. So you take that powerful vehicle, you floor it to get past the B double that's in your way that might actually be taking a left-hand turn down the road anyway. And then you hit a broken shoulder and lose control of the vehicle. It doesn't necessarily have to hit the vehicle. It's that, I don't know how you teach that patience. I'm a veteran of 400 hours of learner driver because of 4 boys. Mm. So I can stare death in the face. They just had the advantage of me having some heavy vehicle knowledge of, like, when you're on the freeway, hey, don't sit in this part of the truck. The driver probably can't see you. But then on the same token, you'll be driving along and you'll see a learner driver with mum or dad in the right-hand lane doing 95 while everybody's losing their minds behind them. And just, you know, with all due respect, if mum or dad are a pretty crap driver, so is the kids.
Mm.
Because there's, other than passing the test, it's those habits, that respect for the road environment, an understanding of how it works. I don't think we're communicating that at all.
I'm conscious we want to bounce through a lot in this episode, right? So can we come to a couple of things quickly here and just get your instant sort of reaction? Firstly, why do you think people put themselves in these situations? Is it because we're time poor? Why do they do that? Why do people create these sort of havoc moments for truckies?
I think it's a false sense of security and just impatience. You know, most modern vehicles now have got a tremendous amount of power, even a little city car does. You put the foot down and they go. So I think it just, that affects our decision-making a little bit too.
What are the key indicators that a car driver might be about to make a dangerous move of some kind around a truck? Are there things that you can, as a truck driver, sense, if you like?
Oh, absolutely. Where they're sitting in relation to the vehicle is usually a dead giveaway. So if they're sitting beside the triaxle at the rear of the truck, they have no concept of where they are or what they're doing. And if they're sitting right beside the passenger side of the truck, also dead giveaway that they're not really conscious of the environment around them because they're in high-risk positions. The driver's probably seen them, but plenty of accidents happen daily where the driver didn't.
And the types of limitations that there are for a truck driver that there isn't for a normal vehicle, for a car and so on, the kind of things that, you know, you guys can't stop quickly. You've talked about visibility there a moment ago and so on.
Yeah, look, this is going to depend on the age of the vehicle and the configuration because obviously you have bonneted trucks, you have cab over trucks, you know, and I don't want to sort of disappear down that rabbit hole, but definitely just weight.
Yep.
There's a reason why there's a gap between the truck and the traffic in front of it on your daily commute. And if there's not, then the driver needs a talking to, right? Like, because you need that extra space. You're leaving that extra space to be able to stop safely.
That's not space for them to dive in on.
No. And that's the most common frustration. You know, you're idling along in traffic. And if you don't do that, and I'm going to put my hand up here and I'm guilty of this, I was driving a bonneted truck in traffic, and I forgot about the 6x4 trailer behind the Pajero in front of me and I ran over it.
Okay.
So not my best day on the road, but like nobody was hurt. Obviously, we were just in. But again, you know, in this case, I was at fault because I was too close to the trailer and I'd lost sight of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was Melbourne traffic. I'm just sitting there idling along and I just clean forgot about the trailer.
You've talked about tech in cars and things. Maybe from Volvo's perspective, there is some great tech for truck drivers now that aids in protection. We can't fully rely on that, though. We don't want our young motorists to think that, oh, well, it's got all the latest safety features, I'm fine. It is great that they have those safety features, but that's not something that you rest your hat on, do you?
No, it's not. It's like, you know, if you look at something like EBS systems in cars, like do we teach people to drive and trigger those all the time, or are they just there in the background? And I think that's even the same with trucks. Mm. I can speak for ourselves and quite a few other few manufacturers. We have autonomous braking. We have a lot more camera systems, blind spot detection.
Stuff to help with fatigue and stuff too, don't you, when your eyes aren't on the road and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. For example, the latest truck we just launched, if I had a health issue or a fatigue issue behind the wheel and I stopped being responsive, the truck would slowly pull itself up, stay on the road and turn the hazard lights on.
Some excellent things there. I don't want to scare our younger listeners, but what we want is your awareness of these vehicles, how difficult they can be to stop, and the knock-on effect for the drivers when something major happens, right? The dangers. Let's circle back to the stories that Rod's been sharing with us. This latest one around a young girl in the back of her mum's car. It nearly hit the fuel tanker. Let's find out what happens next.
The daughter was trembling and the mother got out. She was sort of all shaken up, thinking that she could have killed her daughter. She simply fell asleep because she was on a boring rural road, and that could have cost two of them their lives. It is simple physics. A car weighs, you know, a ton and a half to two, depending on what you have. At that stage, I was probably gracing about 64 ton. So I'm 30 times the weight of the car or more. That's something people have to respect. It's not might is right. I have a sign on the back of my truck that says, if you respect the size and weight of trucks, you will improve road safety for all. If you're a pedestrian, you wouldn't just step straight out in front of a bus and expect it to stop for you because you stepped out in front of it. I can't just stop. I can't move over if there's a car beside me. And it does take me longer to get going and longer to stop. And that's physics. That's not a bad truck driver. Not only do we have a task of delivering the freight, we have a customer that we picked it up from and he wants it picked up at his time and he doesn't care how long you get held up there. And then we have a customer who wants it delivered at their time to suit them because that's what they want. Then you have the road authorities that want us to do it their way. Then we have the public that think that they know better than we do because they've never driven a truck and they don't. And we have all these laws and penalties, things that have nothing whatsoever to do with road safety. It's the stress of watching every vehicle come towards you to see if they're actually watching. And mate, I think twice today I saw one bloke, I have a real concern with these phone cameras. In the past, at least people would have their phone up in front of them so they're at least seeing the road. Now they're all trying to hide their phone down on their lap so they don't get a ticket. But that means instead of watching the road, they're watching the phone. And twice today I saw people who are not looking where they're going but looking at a phone in their lap to use it. And that scares the hell out of me. There is the cost. Like the truck I drive is worth $750,000. I could have another $750,000 worth of freight on it. And somebody gives that to me and says, go and deliver that load, deal with everything you have to deal with, survive each trip each day. And we're getting more and more vehicles on those roads. And then lastly, mate, we do not have enough rest areas for truck drivers. If they want us to be safe, to be able to pull up and have a good sleep, we need places to do it. Toilets are the same. We can't even get a park in a lot of places to get good food and use toilets now. And that adds to the pressure. It adds to the stress. That adds to the fatigue. And there are certainly more and more drivers walking away because of that and other factors. Had I not slowed where I did, she would have gone in underneath my trailers. And I had petrol on. I had 55,000 litres of petrol on a B-double fuel tanker. Her and her daughter most likely would have died. And simply because she didn't recognise those symptoms and they're asleep and it's too late.
How much of that, Matt, resonates for you?
Oh, yeah, it absolutely resonates. Quite often, you know, truck drivers end up playing the role of a first responder. In a regional area, a rural area, you can come across an accident. You might have even seen it. And I'm in no way unique but I was driving through country Victoria. I came around a corner and there was a toddler in nappy sitting in the middle of the road on the white line. I was in a fully loaded truck. It decided to go for a wander.
Far out.
And I'm wandering around with this kid in my arms after, like, I've managed to avoid him and pulled up in the dirt and all that sort of stuff. And then I'm wandering around with this kid in my arms trying to find...
Trying to reunite with parents.
Yeah, I know, right? And, you know, even when I talk about it now, I get all goosebumpy. And, I mean, that's what I mean. I'm in no way unique. There is anyone who's been on the road for any period of time in a heavy vehicle will have a story like that, like Rod's. And that does affect the attractiveness of it as a career.
Why do you love it so much then, if that's the case? Like, you know, on paper you'd think if... I'm going to be confronted with difficult situations on a daily basis. If there are moments that are going to be indelibly imprinted in my mind for the rest of my days, why do you do it?
I can only speak for myself personally. It was a love of wide open spaces. I also liked that sort of feeling of I can listen to what I want to listen to. I can listen to this podcast if I want to. And within certain parameters, you're in charge of your day. Right. Hmm. I've seen meteorite showers. I've seen thunderstorms you wouldn't believe. It isn't, I mean, without wanting to sound like a bad country and western song, we live in a beautiful country and it is a great way to see it and experience it. It just does come with some stark realities, right? You tend to see nature at its fiercest or its most unkind, and you also get exposed to these, incidents as well.
And it's a lot better than sitting in an office for a lot of people.
That's exactly it. And I've worked with plenty of drivers that actually came into it from professional backgrounds, because obviously it's a task-orientated job as opposed to you have to produce something every day. And some people get to a point where they're going, you know what, I don't want the boss to own my noggin. I just want to be able to turn up and do my job and actually have that mental space and enjoy it.
To you both on the topic that Rod mentioned around mobile phones, I mean, that's something we've covered in both season one and season two here. But are the dangers magnified here because it's truck drivers having to deal with motorists who are not paying attention, looking down, trying to hide the phone in the manner that he described to avoid getting detected by the cameras?
Look, that is a contributing factor, and I think we see it all the time just because the vantage point. We can actually see if someone's on their phone. And it's a huge issue. Mm. When our kids were learning to drive, we've got an app on their phone where they log their hours, but we don't want them interacting with their phone. So I'd make them put the phone in the boot before we went anywhere. So there was no, if it chimed, it buzzed or whatever,
yes,
they didn't look at it. It's a huge issue because the car is now a little bit of a collision zone for tech. And it's not just so, even if you're not looking at your phone, you've got something that's like your phone but bigger in the middle of the dash that you're still interacting with. I'm not advocating that we don't have technology in cars. I really sound like a Luddite in this conversation, but I'm just trying to say that we're teaching our kids to drive the inside of the vehicle, not the outside of it.
Yeah, they just focus on everything that's going on in here, in this little tiny space, as opposed to what's going on out in the big wide world, and that's the stuff that's going to hurt them.
Absolutely.
Anybody that's seen any of the shots from the mobile phone cameras, it comes right into the cabin. So whether or not you've got your phone on your lap anywhere, it's part of the photo.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just being dopey, thinking that that's going to hide it.
But we use that phone for everything, for navigating, for, you know, all of this sort of stuff. So we're on one hand, we're in this digital environment where, you know, we're relying on that for so many things. Mm. And then, I don't know, I feel like that we've built this replica digital environment like around the driver. I think that contributes somewhat to the lack of situational awareness that a lot of people have on the road, not just kids.
But even walking down the street, people are on their phones with their head down just looking at this and they'll run into you. So yeah, it's not just in the car. It's actually everywhere.
Or on an e-scooter wearing noise-cancelling headphones. You know, like, I mean, it's all variations of the same thing.
Okay, before we move back to Rod here, can I just get a thought from both of you? We've talked about the PTSD impact that this can have on truck drivers. Let's pause and think about the car driver here. We've talked about, in Rod's comment there a moment ago, about the realization moment for the mum, how upset she was, the thought of losing the daughter and so on. That is the thing. You're in your cocoon here, you're driving along, but there can be huge impacts on you as a driver too, can't there?
Absolutely. You've got to realise that when you're behind the wheel, you're responsible for everybody in your car, but also for what other people are doing. And you have to, at all times, be 100% focused on what you're doing, because you're effectively, you're in control of a one-ton lethal weapon. And especially when you've got to share the road with 64-ton lethal weapons, you need to know exactly what you're doing and what their restrictions are and how to work with them safely. So we've worked out the only way you can really do that is online with simulation.
Well done. So that is the perfect lead in here for us to circle back to Rod, who is absolutely of the same view that there needs to be more education for car drivers.
I put out a survey through the company I work for and asked drivers, what is it that we need to teach car drivers? Then I did it through one of the trucking magazines called Owner Driver, and I've been writing for them for 25 years. Same thing, what is it we need to teach car drivers about sharing the road with trucks? And the very first point, the one that got the most comment, was either pulling out in front of a truck or jumping in front of them coming up to the lights. Now, we try and leave a gap, a braking gap, because we know we need more room to stop. Surely every one of your listeners, if they think for a second, they realise that driving a vehicle, you have your foot on the accelerator. Something happens in front of you, by the time you lift your foot off the accelerator and get it to the brake, doesn't matter whether you're in a car or a truck, that's still, you've already travelled 100, 150 metres, depending on the speed you're travelling at, and then you have to apply the brake. So we try and leave a gap in front. And yet, mate, so often, three times today, I had vehicles either overtake me and pull straight in front, so I've now got no braking space. If something walked out in front of them, they're going to prop and I'm just going to go straight over the top of them because I don't know where to go. And they will not leave you that space. They keep filling it. We keep falling back that little bit, but you can't do it all the time. And it's one of the things I honestly believe we are castigated when we're involved in an accident and a life is lost, but we are never recognised for the lives that we save. Because we do try and anticipate. We watch people and think, geez, this bloke's a bit wandery, or, you know, I bet you he's not looking, or back off a little bit. And I honestly think we save far more lives than we are blamed for taking, but it's never recognised. I have the Truckies Top 10 Tips, and I'd certainly like to see something in video as part of the licensing process. In every state in Australia, even if you sit for a truck licence, there are very few truck-related questions. So there's nothing that makes you go and do any research or learn anything about trucks before you get that license. If we had a video, and honestly, we did the Top 10 Tips video. We got funding from the National Heavy Vehicle Regulator. I rang every state in Australia and said, here are these free videos. They're 9 minutes. Would you be able to include them in your licensing process? I think it's a good idea. The answer was, it's all too hard. No, we can't do it. They weren't interested. I had already badgered them and tried to get more questions in, and we went from one to two, like, again, out of 60 or 80 or 90, depending on what state you're in. That's not enough either. And yet if we had something visual from the seat of the truck or from outside that showed our blind spots, and people don't recognise nor are they taught anything about those blind spots, so they get in the traffic, they don't think that, oh, he's up high, he should be able to see me, but should doesn't cut it. And we don't have rear vision mirrors in the middle like a car does. We have to look down the side so we can't see what's behind us. And we don't educate young people at all about any of that. Everything comes on a truck. Doesn't matter whether it's once or five times it was made, manufactured, delivered, even a petrol in your car that you're driving, that's delivered by truck. If you have some empathy for what truck drivers do, if you respect the size and weight of the truck, we want people to get home safely each trip. And if they have a little bit of patience and a little bit of empathy, I think we'll all be safer on the road. I started a sort of my own road safety campaign at one stage. And I said, if you imagine that every other car around you had a member of your family in it. Now, if there's some bloke going along slow and he's an old fella, well, it might be your dad and he's going to the shops. But if you remember that every other vehicle around you had a member of your family in it, would you risk their life to save yourself 2 seconds? I don't think you would. So why do you do it now?
As you heard there, Rod fundamentally just wishes there was more awareness from car drivers for this stuff, right? I think, for me, change has to happen here. Change has to happen in the licensing process. Change has to happen in the awareness that we expect from motorists around truck drivers, and that comes from experiential things. They have to feel and understand and sit beside a truckie and just have some appreciation. Matt, to you, has being a truck driver improved and made you a better car driver?
Obviously, I have a lot more awareness around heavy vehicles. So I know where I am in relation to the driver's line of vision and things like that. It absolutely is. You can't help but take that on. Even just driving to the conditions. I live in southeast Queensland. It rains a lot at this time of year. Do you sit in a cloud of spray just off the trailer, or do you, you know, get up further where you're visible, you've got your parkers on or something like that if you're in an older car or whatever? What are you doing to adjust your driving to the conditions? Because that's another factor. I see less and less people actually driving to conditions because you're in this, you know, comfortable, custodial environment, and you're not getting wet and you can charge along through the spray. So, yeah, I think I do unconsciously do these things, even if a heavy vehicle comes up behind me, you know, like how you're calculating their braking distance for them, you know.
What kind of training should we have for people around this stuff and the level of importance we should place in it?
We're doing a lot of work, and we're trying to get some funding actually for putting trucks into all our programs. So people, we can actually simulate the physics and the weight and the size and what have you of those trucks. So let people actually share the road with them and pull in front of them. Do what they would normally do on the road, but in a simulated environment, so they can see firsthand that doesn't work and that truck is unable to stop, you know, when I actually pull in front of it like that. Or that truck, you know, I've come in on the inside, he wants to turn left, but he's turning left from the right-hand lane, and I've just ducked in inside there and it's clipped me. Their blind spots. If you could actually do some videos around their blind spots and tell people these are the areas that you can't sit with a truck. But I genuinely think, undoubtedly, it is the safest way to teach them how to share the road with a truck is via simulation.
I love Rod's top tips. I love some of the things that he's tried to integrate in the system there in some of the videos that they've made and so on. Matt, what about for you? What sort of training do you think should be there for people, and what's there at the moment? Why is it not good enough?
My frustration is that why is this, why is private enterprise tackling this?
Mm.
There's a business in WA that has probably the best truck simulator I've seen ever, actually, and they use it to train their drivers to drive road trains and things like that. And I remember sitting there going, wow, imagine putting somebody who just drives a car into this thing, because this is actually, it's like a flight simulator in terms of it moves, it adjusts to weather patterns and weights and all of that sort of thing. So it's quite a complex bit of machinery. But the reality is that, like, I mean, it would be, in an ideal world, everyone would get to actually experience it, but that's not practical. But I feel like, why is there this reticence to actually
take action, to do
take
something.
Take action and make our licensing system better to save lives?
We need to collaborate and get a lot more people involved and get the industry behind it to make government make some changes.
Yeah.
So to those parents that are listening, to the young ones that are listening, as we wrap this up here, maybe a key message you would like to send around this sort of stuff, or a top tip?
My top tip would be respect all other road users, especially the ones that are a lot bigger than you.
Yeah, that, and leave your phone alone. Just think about where you are. I think that's the, and that, whether that's around a heavy vehicle or not, I mean, you can apply that to, like, a, you know, a monsoonal downpour, that, you know, a floodway you're thinking of crossing, the crappy country road that you're driving on. You know, I think that's all a part of that sort of situational awareness that seems to be missing. There's been a couple of real world examples. One happened to me. Another one actually resulted in a fatality in South Australia. Someone drove into a dust storm. And so what'd they do? They stopped. In my case, luckily, the truck I was driving had a radar at the front and said, hey, there's something in that dust cloud. I was slowing down. And I missed a stationary car on a major highway. There was, a couple of years ago, a very similar accident resulted in a head-on of two trucks because he avoided the car that was stopped in the highway. And I think that's, you know, again, you know, the if We don't drive to conditions. We don't understand what to do in these situations, all of that sort of stuff. You know, these things happen and they kill people.
Matt, from all of us to you and the team at Volvo, well done on what you're doing with some of the groundbreaking tech there. But we've really appreciated your insights from over two decades in this business today. That's been superb. And I think the kind of simple walk-away message we would love from all of you is spend a moment in the truckie's shoes and just appreciate the dangers, please. On the next episode of Keep Your Wheels On, what issues are you likely to face driving in the dark that you might not have to think about when the sun is out? Sounds obvious, but visibility is key when driving safely.
It was so foggy, it was hard to see. Like, I didn't see an indicator. I thought in my mind that she was turning right.
And we'll chat with Australian rally champion Harry Bates on why being able to see clearly in front of you is so important.
It's often difficult when you're seeing taillights to know at first what speed they're doing at night. So your approach speed is really important to monitor.
I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is Keep Your Wheels On. Keep Your Wheels On is a listener production brought to you in partnership with My Drive School. Hosted by me, Greg Rust, and Lisa Scaife. Audio production by Kelly Fulston. And executive producer is Todd Stevens.
A podcast funded by the Australian Government and supported by Repco Authorised Service.
Listener.